Hi, everyone. Hello, hello, hello. It's lovely to see you all. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so honored to be part of the Hemingway series. Okay. So I'm going to read three poems for you. I'm working on a Choria poem, which is a choreographed series of poems that focuses on love, sex, and polyamory, specifically how it shows up in Black women's lives. So I'm going to read one poem from that, and then I'm going to read a poem that I recently got accepted for publication, which is very exciting. And then I'm going to read a poem for my father. And that feels like a information for us all. Okay. So this first one is called She Loves, Second Person Plural. At first, it's uncomfortable to tell you I love you with an asterisk, to say you electrify my spirit, but you're not the only one. The concept of loving more than one body, so inappropriate, if not platonic. Romance is reserved for monogamy, singular beings choosing each other. I don't believe it. I can't. Not anymore. When I loved Matthew in eighth grade, I also loved Nick the whole time and long after. When I loved Evan in college, I wanted Ben and Travis and Leah, and I felt awful, guilty, mostly. Love, I thought, is supposed to be individual, the romantic kind anyway, no more than one at a time, or risk labels of cheater or slut. Fear kept me loving one man, Evan, even when he was lazy, even when he was mean, even when he so clearly was designed for oceans, while I cannot swim. No surprise that while I tried to keep loving him, in entered resentment, a familiar shadow shaped like a jealous boyfriend. I went to Africa, like all Black girls eventually do. And as the marriage proposals rained like acid, Evan seethed across the graveyard of my ancestors, convinced that my love, so expansive and forgiving, would be stolen from him. He accused me for months after I started sleeping in American beds again. Who did you fuck over there? Don't tell me I'm crazy. I know you cheated. And I believed for a moment that love looked like suspicion and misplaced guilt. That because I was Eve's daughter, sin belonged to me first. When he tongued a stranger at a concert a year later, he asked for my jealousy. When he slept with a woman he didn't realize he'd fallen in love with, we're just friends, he said. She has a boyfriend anyway. He asked for my jealousy. When he fucked her again in the bathroom while I slept in his bed, my appearance unplanned, a surprise, he woke me to tell me what he'd done. And he asked for my jealousy. I gave him none. Why offer what I've always found boring, possessive, colonizing? I didn't tell him about the man who asked me to be his third wife, how, being the youngest, I'd be his favorite. He'd offered me two cows and several goats to my host mother for my hand, even after she explained I was not for sale. Américain, she kept repeating, meaning she does not belong to me. For 3 years after, I remained largely single, so disturbed by how resentment stole my orgasms and painted my fantasies with shame. One man told me the word then, polyamory, but he was married to two women who were sleeping together, each with a child wearing his crooked smile. Where would I fit into your life? I asked. I couldn't be someone's third wife. Here's what's beautiful. My love has always been selfish. Wanting to be the center of attention, eager for more and more. A friend once told me I demand too much. No such thing, I countered. I'm proposing freedom, sex and communication and unbounded love. If one person cannot worship me, why not ask another? In the middle of my 20s, E said the word again, polyamory. And this time, when I asked how I would fit, he rebuilt his whole world around me. We made love for hours, taking breaks to strategize the destruction of white supremacy. We held hands and made art and kissed and squeezed and salivated and worshiped our infinite selves. And when we weren't together, we found others who would build our temple with us for 3 years. I gave up my lovely soul to him, prepared to give him everything in exchange for a life wrapped in his evanescence. But here's the thing about the word, it makes you lazy. It made me put up with bad behavior, with neglect disguised as love. And I had to leave him before the love became resentment, became danger, became abuse. I left the man who defined my salvation, well, because it ultimately is mine. What I mean is this, I want stroke-like orgasms and someone to make tea when I'm sick and someone to dance with me until midnight and read silently on the other side of the bed and to hold hands in public and clean the kitchen while I go running. I want to choose my attention and get it on command. I don't want to compromise. I'll say it again. I don't want to compromise. I want my love to expand, to build a life of never-ending joy. Love is work, but it's not pain. It's not mediocre. Tell me I love you and know that when I say it back, I'm serious. But I don't mean only you. I mean you, second person plural. I mean you today and you tomorrow. I mean you when you can and me when you can't. Really, I say I love you, but I mean I choose me. You will never be the only one. We can be free together. We can be happy if you say yes to. So next poem, I have a prompt for my students where I ask them to write a poem from the perspective of a character in a game. And so I was playing a lot of Angry Birds at the time. So this is for Bomb, the Black Angry Bird. If any of you are fans, this is for him. So this poem is called Even in Cartoons, We're Scared of the Black One. You like me because I'm the black one, huh? Don't be ashamed. Pretty things often come in black. Designer sunglasses, sexy little dresses, people. When I'm available, I'm the most useful of the bunch. Bombs are like that, useful. You clearly appreciate my worth, my utility in battle. Do you know why they say never bring a knife to a gunfight? Destruction comes in black too. Gunpowder, cats, people. My power lies not in my rage. How basic, a bomb set off by anger, but in my fear. Surprise at underestimation or ignorance. No one ignores a bomb in your world, right? They devote entire squads to its diffusing, its disposal. In therapy, we learn to diffuse our anger, de-escalate tension with deep breathing and empathy. Do you empathize with me? A bomb disguised as a big black bird, as explosive ordnance, as crime in progress, as threat or danger to an officer. I mean, a pig. I mean, piggy that stole our right to due process. No, no, no. Trust in a fair system. No, no, no. Belief in serve and protect. No. Our sense of security. No. Freedom. No. Life. Our eggs. This is a game, after all. How does empathy cut the right wire to disable the countdown, unlight the golden fuse, settle shaken contents ready to explode? Don't make any sudden movements. Scare me. And I go off. All right, my last poem. Last semester, I made my students write a poem for every single day of the semester, which came out to 103 poems. So this is one of those. So this is called Father Poem. It's for my father. And it was based off of a prompt where we had to pull prompts from the beginning, the quotes that start and end Criminal Minds episodes. And this is one of those quotes. And it's by Anne Sexton. And it says, it doesn't matter who my father was, it matters who I remember he was. This is for my dad. My graduate school poetry professor, in an attempt to get a rise out of me, demands I bring her a photo of my mother before I was born. She wants to see who my mother was before she became my mother. It costs me nothing to look at her as a young woman. She looks like I did before college and trauma, save the large hair and even larger glasses. My professor believes she's done something to me when I send her the photo, that somehow seeing my mom before she was my mom would open a canyon in my heart, make me more amenable to criticism, and make me stop performing my poems. Unspeakable pleasure fills me when I say she chose the wrong parent. I suppose gratitude is due because without this exercise, alleged punishment, whatever, I may not have written entire books featuring pieces of my mother, frequently wise, always a survivor of many things, never angry or guilty. Had I found photos of my father, maybe this poem would have begun with him. So absent from my writing, sheltered from verses littered with rape and misplaced love. Maybe because I've always known he would be a father, certainly mine. His youth does not surprise me. Let's start again. In his photos, the smile is the same. A young Michael Jackson when he was still black, his afro still fresh. My father always planned on this life, married, successful children, semi-retirement somewhere warm. He was never absent or abusive, not an alcoholic or a gambler. Church on Sundays, tennis on Saturdays, pickleball now for his knees. I don't believe I've been harmed by my parents for not loving each other. Yes, I'll admit it now. My mother wasn't supposed to be mine, anyone's. Nothing so dramatic as premarital sex, just a fact. She didn't want to be a mother. I imagine as much as she loves us, she planned on independence, love as a side street she intended to investigate briefly, but wound up with a lease in a new country. I wish I could see her in love, beaming at my father, ready to spend forever wherever suited them. But I can't picture it, can't even find the wedding album. This poem was about my father, how I remember him, though he's still alive. I have only images, no character voices the way my mother boasts in other drafts. Simply, learning to season food properly, doing laundry and ironing dress shirts, the plead of a cactus overwatered, his command over the road as we careen from state to state in search of colleges and futures. I promised I would give flowers before a funeral, before it's too late for apologies and forgiveness. So this poem is for him, my father, who I never doubted was mine, and who chose me intentionally, whose love rises up in me when I'm chopping vegetables or completing a spreadsheet. I fear poetry isn't enough. I fear I'll embarrass him with sentiment. But I know I never feared him, this man, wholly consuming and bold, an image of solid gold against a darkening sky. No, never, not once. Thanks, y'all.